Siren Radio.
I know. Speechless. That's all we can say. Speechless. In case you're wondering, the Siren News team are back on duty, and at 5:45 they'll be providing their own update with the news and weather and all the rest of the stuff in terms of sporting news. Isn't that exciting, Anna?
Yes, absolutely. Riveting stuff.
That's the sincerity that always impresses me. Fergus is in the studio. Do you know, he's travelled up from Leicester to be at Leicester to Lincoln. I mean, it's just...
Yeah.
You know,
such another world.
Here was I thinking he'd wrapped up his dissertation, he'd do what most postgraduate students do, obviously the exception of Eloise, who will be here forevermore, which is very important, just doing Latin. But in terms of the whole sort of sequence, he's come back today, so he can actually be either Polly Donaldson or indeed Rory McGowan. Oh, no. Can he replace those things?
Well, I'll probably take Rory's place because that's my middle name. So,
wow.
Yeah. I can already take that. Yeah, it's from part of my name already.
Very, very impressive. Anna, I was sharing with Eva McDonald some of those little videos you've been putting on about doggies eating food and...
it's sweet.
So, I mean, there was a little bit of concern, it has to be said, because, I mean, Eva, you're worried, can dogs eat bananas? Should they be eating food?
Well, I know they can't eat chocolate. I've just never seen dogs eating bananas before, so it was something new.
It's a strawberry that got me.
Yeah,
I mean, one
sure
quite happily chomped the strawberry and the other one didn't. I mean, there's obviously selection going on there.
Yeah. I didn't even know dogs could eat fruit, really.
I mean, yeah, you're looking a bit bemused there, Louise. I mean, dogs and strawberries, is that something which had ever crossed your routine? Or is it some kind of, you know, medieval curse? You know, when the doggeth eateth the strawberryeth, then the far side of the moon will yonder trouble come, or some such stuff.
To be honest, nothing on this radio show shocks me anymore.
Really? Whoa. I mean, Anna, it took you at least 2.5 years before you actually got over the shock value. I mean, Eloise has done it in like just 1.5 years, going from graduate to postgraduate level. This is quite amazing.
Wow, impressive, very impressive.
Never mind. And I didn't realise you were a dog lover, Anna, or was it just a case of, well, the video's so cute we can't cope anymore?
I know. Well, I used to have a dog, a couple of dogs when I was a child, but obviously lifestyle dictates whether or not you have a pet, and it's, for me, the crucial overriding thing. A budgie was as much as I could deal with. You know, I had a friend who could look after him in the holidays. A dog would be a different animal. I do not have a big garden, so it would be absolutely unrealistic to have
a chihuahua.
I have a stuffed fox. That's the only thing I can say is convenient. A stuffed fox is actually quite convenient because it doesn't need walking or feeding.
You could walk it down the underground, I suppose. It might bounce a bit, perhaps. Wheels? Exactly. Put your stuffed fox on wheels and then all will be well. You know, that's all we need. And you could pretend to be a Leicester City supporter and then beat Tottenham 5-0. Sorry, Emma. Eva, any questions you'd like to put to Anna, who, of course, you haven't spoken to since March?
I don't think I've spoken to Anna since March at all, really.
It's because you've been doing other things.
Because I've been away. No, so all I can ask is just how are you and what you've been up to, really?
It's a mixed bag. I've been doing private research for people. Mm-hmm. That involves going to the archives and hence switching my phone off. And more recently, I've been attending an old college friend's funeral. And it suddenly makes you realise that you're not getting any younger when people your kind of generation start to pop their clogs. So, I'm alive and well.
Exactly. You know, don't worry about the Dutch sort of notion of clogs, where obviously clog poppers can be a whole new theme. But, you know, just the popping of the clogs, it opens up so many marvellous things with that system. So, Fergus, how does it feel to have wrapped up all of your postgraduate studies now, handed in the dissertation? Is it just a case of, just bring it on now, I'm just happy to follow Brendan Rodgers' boys where'er they take me?
I'm basically fretting until I get the results, really. Because, I'm a bit of a perfectionist, so I always think that I've...
Could do better?
To add. Yeah, that's the thing. So, basically, I'm hoping I pass the course. Anything better than that's a bonus, you know.
Anna, I mean, you know, cast your mind back to the 20th century when you were actually doing your own postgraduate material. Listen, it's not amusing. Everybody in the studio here is born in the 20th century.
I was just remembering when a couple of weeks ago when we had Tessa Snart in the studio and she said the 1980s is the, I think, a long time ago.
Oh, ancient history.
Ancient history.
Tessa Snart. And Eva, you know, the bottom line is, you know, the 1980s, you might as well honestly be talking about the medieval times.
It's not amazing. With all the 80s. is nostalgia. Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, Eloise...
They just about invented the pen then, I think. That was the biro had just been invented in the 80s, I feel.
I think you'll find the biro was around a little bit before the 1980s, actually. I think you'll find 1930s, perhaps, but not necessarily 1980s. Unless, of course, you know, Eloise in medieval history, they say, yes, without studying the work of Duran Duran and the like of the glam rock era and so on, post-70s and the new romantics, then it just wouldn't be medieval, would it, really?
Because my dissertation subject's sorted.
So. I mean, how often have Frankie Goes to Hollywood actually been channeling their inner Chaucer just to actually get the notion of two tribes going to war and relax, don't do it when you want to come, you know, in terms of the way you actually phrase that. It's extraordinary. We had, I mean, let's face it, a slightly dodgy president of the United States then, Ronald Reagan. Possibly, might say, Margaret Thatcher, interesting from her point of view. No change, although in some ways lots of change, but let's not go there. Two political points, let's just not go there at all, please. Let's just move on. Sorry, I was just looking at an elephant that was bizarrely sort of doing strange things there. This is just what happens when you actually allow videos to actually continue to work through that. And frankly, we can do without elephants doing what that elephant was doing, is all I can say.
All abandoned things.
Exactly. Shutting that window down immediately, because it's just going to create confusion, and any passing journalists who are by will take a look at that elephant and say, what? So let's just keep ourselves going. Eloise, before we head off to William Coles, and heaven only knows what he's going to bring to us this week. I mean, after last week's excitement with respect to being in Too Fast, Too Furious, or indeed Fast and Furious 10, or whatever he was actually
fast
doing.
Fast 9, I think.
Was it 9?
I think so, yeah. Fast 9.
Well, as I said, I still haven't actually managed to get around to see the first 8. Apart, unless, of course, you include Hobbs and Shaw.
8.5, maybe?
Could be. We'd like to put those last two questions to Anna Lewis, please.
Yes. Anna, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
I certainly have, thank you.
And will you be joining us again soon?
Oh, I'd love to. Thank you for asking.
And the great news is, this next little piece of music, which is going to take us through to William Coles, is something which probably will start Eva MacDonald off in a whole dance routine, because when we were doing the whole prep for the show, I said, so which one do you think you should actually go for? And you said this...
Come out tonight.
come out because she's got glandular fever. Strange but true. Maybe it's because you had glandular fever that you've actually become a fan of Frankie Valli. What do you think, Eloise? I mean, does that cause it? Because obviously that's something you share with Eva, the glandular fever approach, and that probably brings you to appreciate male falsettos.
I feel like everyone's a fan of Frankie Valli. So.
Everyone. Yeah. A universal line there. Bill Coles, are you a fan of Frankie Valli?
Of course I am. How can I not be? It's universal.
Exactly.
Well, there you go. A classic Jersey boy. We might even squeeze another one before to end, before we wrap up the whole thing. So it's amazing. Why sherry in particular, as opposed to port or rum or gin?
I don't know. I just heard it a lot over the summer, but I don't. I think it's just a song that, you know, you just appeal to some.
And
more
in what others. In what context, Eva? Because of course the other memory line that comes through is "Middle of the Road" and "Chirpy Chirpy Cheep Cheep."
I love that song.
Why was sherry particularly symbolic this particular year for your good self?
I don't know. I really like listening to falsetto. And that song just touches on it more than
you others. You must access the rubettes, my girl. From times past, the Rubettes. Probably before your time, William, but were you a Rubettes fan? Sugar Baby Love?
Moderate. I mean, probably not as much as you, but you were obviously a fan.
No, actually. I thought that they actually completely ripped off the Donny Osmond cap at the time, and I just thought, what? Honestly, what's going on this particular basis? It's just a step too far, really. However, life continues. Fergus, falsetto, ever considered it? Is it just a case of my trousers are tight enough already, thank you, without actually tightening them even further?
My voice is nearer to that of Johnny Cash than Frankie Valli. Attempt to sing.
It's the pain. Exactly. It's the pain that sort of works upon us. William, what have you been getting up to this week in the pre-show chat that we were having over a hot chocolate, which gave us all the wonderful, like, hot chocolate-like moustaches, which Eva obviously left. She didn't let me know that I actually had a lot of brown stuff on my upper lip. So
I did at the time.
thinking,
did at the end.
Exactly. It would be hugely embarrassing on the whole thing. Hugely. Especially if we'd had a newbie coming in from that point of view. Anyway, what have you been getting up to, William, this week? I mean, more supporting artistry work, more writing, more staggered views at our Eton folk in Westminster. Where have you been going?
I've been with a young student who's just come up here to Edinburgh University from London, and she was whinging about the weather and how cold it was and generally miserable. And I said, what are you talking about? This is a genuine Indian summer up here. It's really nice. And she said, what, it's going to get colder? And I said, this is honestly as good as it gets. And she thought I was joking, but I said, no, get an umbrella and get a coat because it's going to get much worse. And her eyes popped out at that one.
Yes. I did detect the beginning of a little bit of a nip in the air amongst the kind of warm weather. So winter is a-coming.
That's right. That's right.
Says everything. Winter is a-coming. Okay. Exactly. That's the important thing. But we're still actually in the middle of October and doing all sorts of other marvellous things from that point of view. So, William, who do you wish to chat to? Eva, Fergus, or Eloise?
I would like to chat to Eloise, please.
Hi.
Hi there. Now, in the car on the way to school, we have been listening to The Magic Flute by Mozart.
Nice.
And Mozart had a sister-in-law who could get very high notes. And so he wrote a special aria for her in The Magic Flute with the highest note I've ever heard in The Queen of the Night. And it's a fantastic song. And my children try and hit these notes. I try and hit these notes, but I'm not even close. Do you reckon you could hit these very, very high notes in The Queen of the Night, which is about the highest note you get in an opera?
Bearing in mind, of course, that Eloise, unlike Eva, is not a trained singer. But that's okay, you know?
That doesn't mean anything, Alex.
That means nothing, nothing at all.
I reckon I make a quite a high-pitched sound if I hit my toe on a door or something, so I'd give that a go next
right,
time.
Okay. So that's what we need to do. We need to sing along to the Queen of the Night, and then at the critical point, slam your toe in the door. And
I think that would work.
I mean, Eva, I haven't heard that used as a singing technique. Is it something you've picked up with your various singing tutors? I mean, can we look forward to, you know, Eva McDonald sings the high notes?
I think it's a high F in The Queen of the Night. I'm not too sure.
It would be a high F, wouldn't it? No. It would certainly be a high... It would be the reverse of that, would it? Please.
In musical terms.
70 minutes past five, and we're actually sort of into the role of F in terms of obviously the keynote.
I really like that aria. It's one of my favourites. But yeah, I wouldn't advise banging your toe is probably a way to have a technique to singing it.
Yeah. I don't know if that helps.
Can you hit a high F? And is there anything higher than a high F? Like a high G?
I guess so. I think Queen of the Night is probably the highest you can go. I haven't ever heard of any other arias that go above F.
And personally, I think we should be quite satisfied with Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Ti, Do, basically. I mean, that's, you know, ultimately, it was good enough for Julie Andrews, yep. And the way they hopped up and down in Salzburg. The steps, it's very impressive. 18 minutes past 5 o'clock. We will be talking shortly to Dwayne Claydon, but we're also talking about David Lewis's time hacks, how to read faster and more efficiently, how to hold or attend more productive meetings, how to set goals and establish priorities using the 4 D's of time management. Do you know, Richard? Richard? It's easy to use. In another show, same time. Exactly. William, do you know why the tradition of actually giving people retirement clocks was ever developed and so on? You know, why, when you actually came to the end of your time at News International, if Rupert Murdoch was really thinking seriously about the whole thing, would he have actually presented you with a watch or a clock?
I did get a clock, actually, to commemorate 25 years after they'd done their flit to Wapping. Oh. I have no idea, though. Is it so that you can have it on the mantelpiece and count out the hours till you die?
Well, possibly. But according to David Lewis, and he's done the research, we'll follow this through after the news from the Siren team, at around about 10 to 6, in industrial towns and cities where a giant clock above the mill or factory often marked time for an entire community, crafty bosses were not above ensuring their timepieces ran slow during the working day and speeded up once the factory closed. To prevent their ploy being discovered, employees were banned from bringing watches onto the premises. From this comes the tradition of presenting a long-serving worker with a watch or clock on retirement, symbolising the fact that time is finally their own.
It's a bit much, isn't it?
Well,
that's a pretty freaky mechanism that's, you know, slows down for 8 hours and suddenly speeds up again.
Mm-hmm. And yet, before timetables came into place with respect to travel, there was such a difference between the time in Edinburgh, the time in Lincoln, the time in Great Yarmouth. It was just a whole new world from that point of view. It's just a modern idea of time from all sorts of things. Even,
but surely they knew when noon was anyway, because you can see the sun at the high point, and you know that's noon.
Even Samuel Pepys, known for his diary, organised his day by means of a sundial and church bells.
He'd have known all about taking the time at noon.
And this modern idea of time arose out of Puritan opposition to the Roman Catholic ecclesiastical calendar. Their notion, Puritan notion, of 6 working days followed by a day of rest had been generally adopted by the end of the 17th century. More about time in the time of the midweek drive. Coming up after Eva has delivered those last 2 questions to William. Go, Eva.
Yes.
Do you want her to sing it for you, Eva?
I don't think I could hit that right now. Okay. I lost my voice about 2 weeks ago.
It is very true. I mean, you do realise this girl basically was literally almost dying with glandular fever, and you ask her to reach a high F. What are you, some kind of sadist? Carry on, Eva. Just ask the question.
I won't go that far. Yeah. have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today, William?
I've loved it. Thank you so much for asking.
It's okay. It's been very positive and chirpy, I think. Will you be joining us again soon?
I do hope so. Thank you so much.
And now, dealing with missing parents who might be there at evening time and then in the morning, they're all gone.
Where's your papa gone? Little baby gone?
think we get the message. Chirpy, chirpy, cheep, cheep. Which may not be characteristics of Crisis Point, but who knows? When you are an author who's combined your knowledge and experience as a police officer and paramedic to write crime thrillers, and your first novel, Crisis Point, was a finalist for the 2015 Crime Writers of Canada Arthur Ellis Award, clearly you know a little bit about the whole notion of whether it should be chirpy or cheep in any way, shape or form. We are delighted to welcome to the Midweek Drama Making His Debut the awesome Dwayne Claydon. How are you, Dwayne?
I'm great. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me on the show.
Genuine delight. Now, just to confirm, are we reaching you in Alberta, Canada today, or whereabouts in that fine North American country are you based?
Yeah, I'm based in Calgary, Alberta, Canada.
Marvellous. Experience in emergency services, over 40 years of that. Work as a police officer, a paramedic, a tactical paramedic, firefighter, emergency medical services, chief educator, and academic chair. Have you literally decided to do everything to actually sort of put the things together, Dwayne? I mean, there are people who would be exhausted just listening to two or three of those things, not the whole lot.
Yeah, yeah. I had a great and varied career. Some people said that I did a whole bunch of things, and other people said I just couldn't hold a job.
Well, you know, you're multi-talented. That's the important thing from that perspective, and it's worthwhile putting together. Born in Calgary, Alberta, began your career as Calgary police officer in 1978, but then realised that everybody was happy to see paramedics. Did they not like the police in Canada?
I think that's situational, but yeah, there's definitely a dislike for police.
Yeah, well, so that's why you switched careers and joined the Calgary Fire Department. Well, it's some rationale, effectively. And their ambulance division, to be precise. In 1984, you graduated as a paramedic and worked for Calgary Emergency Medical Services, and then took a position at the end of the 80s at the Southern Alberta Institute of Technology as an instructor in the pre-hospital care program. So what drove you to actually become one of the Crime Writers of Canada finalists and actually develop the whole essence of writing about the whole work that you've been involved with and so on?
Yeah, well, I guess it goes back to very early in my life. My mom read to me Hardy Boy Mysteries, and that's where I learned to read. And I just loved the mysteries, and over time I read Earl Stanley Gardner and The Saints and just anything I could that was mystery. And in my mind, as a teen, I had this idea of a story I would write. And then career and other things get in the way, and that kind of sat dormant until 2010, when I needed a hobby, I needed something else to do, and one day driving to work, I got this idea that, well, I should write. And I went to work and looked up on Google for a writing class, and there was one that started the next week. I signed up for the class, and I've been writing for 9 years now.
Which makes absolute perfect sense. I mean, looking at some of the reviews for Crisis Point, the Calgary Police Service, I read Crisis Point completely in one day. Fantastic. You are Canada's answer to Joseph Wamba. Do yourself a favour and read Crisis Point and Outlaw before you read Wolfman Is Back. Dwayne's writing reminds me of James Patterson. I just can't put them down, from a member of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. And just when you thought things were quieting down for Bit Brad Coulter, Jetta Wolf Returns, a great third novel in the series, surprise twists and turns. If you like Joseph Wamba, you love Dwayne Claydon. You mentioned Leslie Charteris, of course, creator of The Saint and so on, and you know, very much playing around with that whole notion of the modern Robin Hood and so on. Let's open it up to our fine folk in the studio. Let's talk first to Fergus as an English graduate and so on. Are you into your crime thriller fiction or so?
I've just started getting into some kind of classic detective stories. Like, I've read The Maltese Falcon recently, and I'm currently working my way through The 39 Steps. So I'm kind of going into those kind of old-school detective ones. But I do enjoy some crime thrillers, you know.
Where are The 39 Steps?
I don't know. I'm still trying to find them.
Where are The 39 Steps? Is it all to do with hypnotism? I don't know. Maybe it's just a tourist guide for Scotland. And also, so that Eva, crime and fiction.
Do you know what I actually do? When I was when I was back in school, I studied psychology as an A level. It actually really interests me sometimes. I don't know what it is about it, but it's fascinating. And I always find TV documentaries touching on crime and things like that. It's could be seen as disturbing, but it's quite interesting and fascinating, and just to see how things pan out, really. And
you just have to look at the popularity of true crime channels and literature.
It's popular, isn't it? But it's weird because they're such a they could be so disturbing, or they can touch on sensitive topics, but people just find them fascinating.
Is that it, Dwayne? I mean, because obviously you've worked both sides of the fence in many ways. I mean, is it a case of we have this fascination with the dark side and the sort of sense of where people who effectively might be beyond the law might think they're beyond the law, and we like the sort of comeuppance at the end? I mean, in some cases, we don't. I mean, you know, the fascination with serial killers, for instance.
Yeah, there's definitely the fascination with serial killers. And I think maybe some of it, too, is for me, I lived a lot of this for 40 years, the kind of the dark side of society. And not a lot of it, as much as there is in the press, not a lot of it really makes the press. Mm. And so I think there is a fascination and an interest on what the darker side of any particular city is or neighborhood is. And that draws people in. And I think the way the story is built, too, that it creates the excitement, the thrill of the chase, so to speak, in a lot of crime novels. Mm.
Eloise. Crime.
Yes, I like a bit of crime.
You like a bit of crime.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, is this crime in terms of procedural procedures? I mean, sometimes you look at TV series, not another police procedural set in whatever part of the country, which could be a murder capital like Oxford and Inspector Morse and so on.
I like a bit of everything. I like thrillers. I like horror films. I like crimes.
I mean, you mentioned Dwayne, the Hardy Boys, and Hardy Boys. Now, was that with Nancy Drew, of course, as well, or was it just the Hardy Boys?
Well, I didn't read the Hardy Boys, but my sister is 3 years younger than I am. So when Mom was reading Hardy Boys to me, I had to endure the Nancy Drew stories as well. No, I like them as well. So, yeah, those were the two things that I grew up with.
And looking at Crisis Point, Outlaw, and Wolfman is Back, the Brad Coulter scenario, is this a character that effectively we can see more of? Is it a case of, no, I've done my trilogy, there's no more now, I'm going to kill him off?
No, I think he's going to keep going for a long time. The idea, or the original premise, was that if I had stayed as a police officer instead of becoming a paramedic, what could my career have looked like? So I guess initially Brad Coulter was me, and what could my career have been? But over the first novel, for sure, he developed his own characteristics and maybe a better version of me. But yeah, the idea would be I'm going to take his career right through to retirement and maybe a little beyond that as well. So initially the books were going to come out every 2 to 3 years. I did that in the first couple, but I've started slowing things down a little bit now. So they're
gotta live in the moment.
Kind of following close on each other.
I mean, it's the same with Bosch. There's another sort of character who sort of works through the sort of procedures and lines of work. And do you have any current favourites that sort of you tend to turn and say, yeah, ultimately, if I was going to put my dream team together, I mean, you know, I make no bones about it. I mean, Steve McGarrett, head of Hawaii Five-O, to me, he's like your number one guy. You know, either Jack Lord or indeed the later incarnation, he is, you know, the man you'd sort of say he'd sort it out. But are there anybody else that you'd sort of turn around and say, actually, I've always had a fondness for Theo Kojak, for instance, who's also pretty cool, it has to be said.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned my favorite right now, though, would definitely be Bosch. Uh-huh. I've read all the novels and watching the TV series, and I quite like it. I totally believe that Titus Welliver is Bosch. Mm. That's almost who I had in my mind when I read.
And let's face it, if you're having to sort of exist in Los Angeles and go through the sort of challenges he's faced with, then, you know, inevitably you're going to be somewhat worn down with the wares and cares of society and so on. It's a matter of course. So, I mean, are you more of a classicist? Are you a case of, no, fundamentally it's got to be Sherlock Holmes? I mean, surely when it comes to detective, he is the man.
He's definitely the man, and I absolutely like the Sherlock Holmes series. I'd say Jeremy Brett was probably my favorite of the Sherlocks. And I guess I like Sherlock's kind of dry sarcasm. But any character that has the quick wit and sarcasm, I like. Robert B. Parker had a character that was portrayed in the movies by Tom Selleck, and he was a very troubled police chief with kind of a dark, checkered history, lots of flaws. And so that's the kind of character I like. I don't like the perfect life. I don't like everything going well for my characters. And so I guess one of the writing premises is, you know, if your character wants something, don't let them have it. And if they have something, take it away. And as the series has progressed with Brad Coulter, his life is more challenging and he's losing the things he loves.
And proving that even back in 2017, you were saving lives through your blog, the classic line of an EpiPen is for people with a severe allergic reaction known as anaphylaxis even. The EpiPen is a life-saving device delivering a specific amount of the drug, epinephrine. Anyway, it is carried today by an increasing number of adults and children. The device, when used properly, is life-saving. However, the way it's sometimes used on television and movies is completely wrong. And you go on to cite the movie Horrible Bosses, in which one of the main characters is shown straddling the chest of a man with a peanut allergy who was exposed to peanuts. In an attempt to save his life, the main character stabs him in the chest repeatedly with the EpiPen. Whilst this is a comedic film, the action is often portrayed the same way in more serious movies. This is completely wrong. Sorry, I just wanted to get that emphasis out there from that point of view. So you don't want to... Anybody who's got anaphylactic shock from that point of view, it's not good. Do you get irritated, as obviously I do just there, about folk, Dwayne, where you actually see things that it just couldn't happen? It's ridiculous. What are you doing? You're insulting the intelligence of the reader and the audience.
Yeah, I think there's two components to that. One is the things that just couldn't happen. One of my big pet peeves is when the police are making a raid on a house and everybody goes in the front door and the bad guys run out the back door because nobody
Killer.
Thought to cover the back door.
Exactly.
And that was kind of, you know, humorous. And I just go, oh, that's just silly and stupid. But what does get me, and that's an excellent example with the EpiPen, is things that are dangerous. Mm. So, you know, when you get your EpiPen from the pharmacist probably spends like 47 seconds with you telling you how to use it. Mm. And gives you the directions, which, you know, no guy is going to read them for sure. I don't know about the ladies.
Well, not Canadian
and
anyway,
so
but hey. Real guys don't read directions.
Oh, exactly. And so you see this on TV and you think, oh, that's the way to do it because they showed it on TV. So those ones scare me when I see things like that are truly dangerous and done wrong. I've done a couple of lectures and a few blogs on what TV and movies get wrong. And, you know, so that was one of them that is particularly dangerous. You see CPR being done wrong. And I know it's hard to show real CPR on TV. And yet, I guess if we can create realistic-looking dinosaurs that bite people, we should probably be able to, in the TV and movies, come up with something that looks like real CPR.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And don't get me started on the Heimlich maneuver, because that's a completely different one entirely. Ridiculous. Fergus, any thoughts on this, or is it a case of, well, at least for the last few minutes we've raised via Dwayne some very health conscious aspects, including beware of the movie Horrible Bosses?
Yeah, I've seen that movie myself. I was wondering, a popular thing in fiction nowadays is that there's the rise in crime things of the anti-hero, like your Tony Soprano, your Walter White. In your time working in the police, did you ever find those kind of cult heroes emerging, these kind of cult criminals during your time?
I would say that there's definitely a fascination with organized crime, and in particular North America, and I'm not so sure about the United Kingdom, but I know Australia as well, is with the outlaw motorcycle clubs. Mm. And that they're involved in prostitution, drugs, all major crimes, and yet they do a bike ride for cancer or to raise funds for disabled kids, and everybody thinks, oh, these are great guys, look what they're doing in the community, and kind of ignore the stuff that's going on behind the scenes. Or
it's like,
don't
it's
know
like Robin Hood on bikes, really, motorbikes to be precise. I do Robin Hood on bicycles.
Yeah.
Could probably sort of be quite interesting. You know, kind of honour amongst thieves thing. I might work on that. Dwayne, perhaps we could do a co-author package on that basis. It has been as we expected it would be. Just frankly, amazing. Dwayne, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on your first appearance on the Midweek Drive? Has it been okay for you, sir?
Oh, this has been excellent. It was great talking with you guys. Thank you.
Excellent. And the next critical question is, can we look forward to featuring you again in the very near future? Will you be kind enough to return?
I would love to return. Book 3 is coming out in November, so maybe later on we can chat about that one.
That's a matter of weeks, literally a matter of weeks, as we're in October now. DwayneClayden.com is the go-to website for all manner of marvelous things, including some very impressive colours. The motorbikes that we actually see on the cover, was that a deliberate choice for your good self, or was it a case of, well, that was the only kind of one they actually had available, so that's what we went for?
No, we were definitely looking for the specific type of bike to fit in with the story. And Travis, who's the guy who does my covers, does an absolutely wonderful job. I love the covers he does for me.
And I suppose it would be remiss of us not to ask you, because I'm sure the movies will already be optioned, etc. Who would you ideally like to see Brad Coulter? Or do you have to say, I'm sorry, I can't reveal that at this moment because we're still under negotiations?
Unfortunately, right at this point in time, there's no negotiations going on, but I'm probably biased, but I think the stories would work very well in TV as a series or a movie.
Well, you know, maybe after he's actually finished doing High 5-0, then McConaughey could actually sort of make it from that point of view. Just a thought. But anyway, just a thought.
I actually had Bradley Cooper kind of.
I can see a sort of Rocket Raccoon element coming into Wolfman. You know, certainly. It would work very well, so that's great. It has been, as we said, awesome, Dwayne. Take care, keep on keeping on, and we'll speak again very soon.
Sounds great. Thank you. Have a great day.
There's always someone.
that it is 1984, but of course it was from the movie 1984, which is why Annie Lennox actually talks about 1984 in Sex Crime. There we are, a little bit of explanation there, a little bit of additional exposition. We know you like it, we know you appreciate it, especially where we're about to head up to the news, for the first time delivered, of course, by the Siren News team, which normally, and indeed for the foreseeable future, we will be saying the time now is 5:45. It is indeed time for the Siren News.
FM. Online. Mobile. This is.
Now here, you see, it takes all the running you can do to keep in the same place. If you want to get somewhere else, you must run at least twice as fast as that. When you actually see that as a quote, you realise that the latest epic production from the awesomely wonderful Dr. David Lewis, Time Hacks, it's going to be magical, and it is, and useful. And Dr. David Lewis, founder of Mind Lab International, welcome back to the Midweek Drive. How are you,
sir? Hello, how kind of you.
Very critical. I mean, we were sharing in the first part of the programme, David, prior to the news, about your tale of our forebears in terms of the origins of the retirement clock. It's fair to say that our Edinburgh correspondent was taken a little bit aback by that. He thought it was, wasn't quite convinced about the notion of getting the retirement clock so that you can control time. And indeed, owners of factory people are actually winding down the clock or make it go slower and so on. But time, up until relatively recently, as you said, has been one of those kind of nebulous things which, as Albert Einstein, in one of my own favourite quotes, has frequently said, the most persistent of illusions is that past, present and future are separate entities.
Well, indeed. And I just go back to the factory clock. Of course, the big factories, mills, the cotton mills, for example, don't have a big clock outside because most people didn't have watches or clocks. Yeah. And indeed, during the First World War, it was really the First World War, which introduced the wristwatch, because, you know, if you're going over the top, you poor soul,
you'll have to
pull out your pocket watch to make sure it's over the top hour, that kind of thing. But yes, I mean, it was really the introduction of the railways which gave us our unified time in the UK. Before that, different parts of the country would have different time zones. So if you had a stagecoach, indeed, in about 1784, the first long-distance stagecoach was set up, ran from Bristol, I think, to London. And they actually carried a clock on board which changed time according to the part of the country they were in.
And this is one of the reasons why, I think, apart from that wonderful historical input, Time Hacks becomes an indispensable guide to practical ways of managing your time and reducing your stress. Now, in the studio today, David, we have a young lady who's doing her postgraduate work. She graduated in film and television studies from the University of Lincoln. She's now doing medieval history.
I am, yes.
And
Hello. Good evening.
Working through the processes of Latin. Now, how can, when she's studying Latin, she learn how to read faster and more efficiently, hold or attend more productive meetings, set goals and establish priorities, and utilise the four D's of time management, deal with time wasters, and reduce stress and use it constructively?
Well, that's right. I think the basic thing to understand is, you actually, although the book says managing time, you can't actually manage time. You know, if I was to give you 10 seconds, now manage it, what would you do with it? You can't. Well, what you can do is manage yourself. And the secret of managing yourself in relation to time is to have clear goals in life, to set yourself clear goals, short-term, medium-term, and long-term goals. And then you can assess every activity you're undertaking in terms of, does it actually assist me in achieving one of my goals? You mean that you might have work goals, where it would be to do a particular piece of work within a certain amount of time you've been allocated. It would be family goals. It could be sporting goals. It could be different goals in different aspects of your life. You don't just have one goal. But then when you're doing a task which relates to that specific goal, you can say, okay, well, the 4D of time management then comes in. And the 4Ds are simple. You could either drop it, you could delay it, you could delegate it, or you could do it. So let's look at delay, because a lot of people think of delay as the thief of time, procrastination. And indeed, often it is. I know a lot of journalists, for example, who waste time right up to the moment of the deadline, because they like... When I was working in Fleet Street, I had a lot of my colleagues suffer from this. They would leave it to absolutely last minute because they believed the adrenaline flow, what they called the deadline high, would actually improve their writing skills. But, of course, it did mean that if anything went wrong, they didn't have time to recover. So sometimes delaying things can be bad, but it can be a very useful thing. It can be a useful thing, for example, if you're not in any fit state, undertake the task. If you're very tired, for example, or if you're perhaps a bit inebriated, it's not a good idea to try and...
A former common problem for many journalists, it would seem.
Well, well, in the days when I was in Fleet Street, we spent most of our time in the many pubs along Fleet Street.
I think liquid lunch was the actual...
A liquid lunch would probably last till 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Oh. And I used to see some of my colleagues staggering back to their offices. I had no idea, but they produced brilliant coffee. But I'm not suggesting that as a road to creativity. I'm just saying that is what happened in the... I regard it rather nostalgically as the bad old days of Fleet Street. But, yeah, so the deadline high. Delay things if you're not fit state to do it. If you're in an emotional state, if you're very angry or very upset, you know, it's going to make it hard to make good judgments. So why not delay it at that point? Or delay it if you just don't have the skills or knowledge to do it. A lot of people rush in to do a job when they don't really have sufficient knowledge to do it, and the result is often pretty poor. So in those cases, delaying would be very good. Can you delegate the job? Are other people more skilled? As a rule of thumb in business, you should never do a job which can be delegated to somebody who earns less than you do.
Fair point. And probably used excessively in a number of instances, which we won't go into here for fear of legal reprisal. Eva MacDonald, in the entertainment business, you've been having a look at Dr. David's work. I mean, I'm particularly taken by Ask Dr. David, some 30 years' experience of helping people deal with a wide range of psychological problems, from panic attacks to phobias and memory lapses to excessive stress. But what in your own research, Eva, have you actually discovered and want to focus to ask Dr. David this evening?
Well, I was reading some articles earlier, and it touched on how people working in their... I can't remember exactly the article, but it touched on people overworking in their day jobs and overworking themselves, really. Would you say that overworking in your day jobs is kind of contributing to the stress more because they're not focusing on their goals?
Well, I think sometimes they are between a sort of a clock and a hard place. They have perhaps bosses or line managers who are very demanding, perhaps excessively micromanaging everything, and they often feel very trapped. I deal with a lot of very stressed out executives who say that time is their worst enemy. They say, well, I have 168 hours available to me each week. Unfortunately, I have 268 hours worth of things I've got to do, must do, need to do, want to do. And so I think time pressures are one of the big areas of causing stress. We've essentially become stressed when we are in a situation where we want to succeed, but something is getting in our way. It may be we don't have the knowledge to do it. It may be we're trying to work with somebody who's very uncooperative or very demanding. So that in my research on stress is one of the basic reasons. If you don't care whether you do it or not, you're not going to feel especially stressed. If you know you could do it very easily, then you're not going to feel especially stressed. So when I was working in schools, for example, I would find the kids who always sat at the back and never caught the teacher's eye and just kind of went through their school career not really learning anything, they weren't particularly stressed. The kids who were really bright and knew they could do it, you know, almost sort of standing on their heads, they weren't especially stressed in most circumstances. It was the kids in the middle who wanted to succeed, who wanted to achieve for their parents, for their teachers, for themselves, but found it difficult. These were the ones we most often found, you know, with anxiety problems or with stress problems. That's why I've really been interested in managing time, or how, no, you can't, but I mean, how to actually manage yourself in order to manage time.
Fergus, does this resonate with yourself at all? Or is it a case of, no, I finished my master's work now, it's just chill time?
Well, now it's PhD time.
Exactly.
not for a while. Not for a while. I've not ruled it out, but I understand the deadline high, definitely, because...
The deadline high.
I know in the past I've sometimes left things to maybe the last few days, and it's like, you know... because sometimes there seems to be like a... would you say that sometimes in there may be like a block, like you want to... found people who want to work, but then sometimes something's kind of stopping them within their own mind?
You can always find a distraction. I mean, I've known people who've got, you know, kind of had to finish an essay, for example, when I was working at Sussex University. And they knew they had to finish the essay, and they were rearranging their paper clips into a sort of size order on the desk.
Ah, classic displacement activity, the paper clip arranger.
Indeed, very much so, yes.
It works in so many ways. I mean, I've got to say, David, I think, I mean, just when I think you could now do your wonderful work that you did on exam and dealing with exam stress, etc., Time Hacks is absolutely awesome. I mean, not just the quotes, but I mean, I love the character of Chris, who effectively sort of is stressing about all manner of routines from that point of view. And the classic, I mean, anybody who can include a quote from Geoffrey Chaucer, "For time lost may naught recovered be." I mean, that's
well,
got to
exactly
be...
Exactly so. But I'll give you a quote from Richard III, actually, Hamlet, Act 5, Scene 5, where he said, "I wasted time, now time doth waste me." So, you know, carpe diem, seize the moment, because time is swift flying.
You never know when it's going to come back, or if it's ever going to come back from that point of view. And I love the sort of the point. Let's just do this little exercise in the studio, I think, if I may, with the team, and we can actually score this on the space. I've got to read 10 little lines out with David's assistance. So basically, award yourself 1 point if you actually have this as your own belief. So feel free to note this down. Number one, I'm a naturally disorganized person. Okay, that's one. Number two, the only way to get more work done is by working even harder. That's number two. Number three, I can be equally productive throughout the day. Number four, planning your time removes all the spontaneity from life. Number five, I need the pressures of deadlines to be fully productive. And number six, I must achieve complete control over how my time is spent. And number seven, if you want a job done well, you have to do it yourself. Number eight, delegation is always a great time saver. And number nine, I just don't have enough time to get myself organised. And finally, number 10, lack of punctuality is a sign of inefficiency or discourtesy. That's my own particular lie. I can't even radio. You can't even, I mean, it's as bad as actually sort of saying you're going to call somebody on a particular sort of week and then you wait a week before you get in touch with them and get them back on the show. It's just dreadful. Dreadful. You know, have to do all sorts of things on that basis. Eva, what's your score on that? How many points would you have awarded out of that sort of thing? The last one was lack of punctuality is a sign of inefficiency or discourtesy. Do you agree with it? Do you not agree with it? Does it register? And what's the score? How many have you scored so far in terms of that?
So far, I've got four.
Four. Okay, Fergus?
I've also got four.
Also four.
Spooky, I've got four as well.
Four. Oh. So, David, what does that share? What does that sort of reveal as they're scoring not naught, not 1 to 3, but between 4 and 6?
Well, are all the questions?
I think just basically between 4 and 6, so your ability to manage time effectively.
Yes. Well, I mean that's a kind of an average kind of range, slightly on the high side. So, just so you know, there may be times that I remember when I was a student, there certainly were times when I thought, I'm really missing my time. I've got to go down the pub. I've got to do this, that, and the other. And it all seems so much more important than attending a tutorial or finishing an essay on time. So I think we're easily distracted. I think the younger we are, with due respect, the easier it is to be distracted because life is so rich and so new and there's so many interesting other things to do. I think the reason I put those questions is, it's not possible to work at full speed the whole time. You have what we call prime time, when your body is maximally physically and mentally alert. Your mind and body are mentally and physically alert. And other times, perhaps in the middle part of the morning, a lot of people feel they have a dip in energy. And also in the early part of the afternoon, a lot of Mediterranean countries, they have this siesta, exactly. Which is actually a very good idea.
I personally, David, would like to see... I'd like to see hibernation brought back as a way forward for mammals in northern climates.
Well, some of the weathers we've been having, I would agree with you.
Exactly.
So that's why that question was in. I mean, punctuality is interesting. A lot of companies, in my experience, will actually use delaying you deliberately in order to kind of enforce a hierarchy. So, you're going for a job interview, for example, and they ask you to be there at 11 o'clock, and they keep you waiting till 10 past 11, 20 past 11. In some cases, I knew people weren't actually seen till midday. That could be that the other people are extremely busy. So we've got to take that into account. But very often, it's just simply they're trying to say, I can manage your time, therefore I am superior to you. I'm higher up the pecking order. I'm higher up the food chain. And the more important somebody is, the more likely they are to want to emphasize their importance against your importance by actually deliberately delaying you and deliberately setting an appointment they don't intend to keep. They intend to keep you waiting. So at that point, you either decide, I'm going to walk out of this, or what I used to do is keep myself busy. I'd take work I had to do, and I would just sit in reception and use it basically as an office I didn't have to pay for. But I think if you just sit there twiddling your thumbs or reading the you know, 10-year-old copy of The Spectator or something. You're actually going to...
Yeah, despite wanting to actually find out what our Prime Minister was once saying and lying about back in those days. We best not go down that line at all. It's a different route entirely. I did like the little anecdote as well, David, that you incorporated about the, I suppose, the macho attitude time where you had the American executive who, when he arrived on morning, used to actually go around the cars of his fellow sort of workers just to see was the radiator still warm, and if it was warm, they hadn't been there early enough.
Well, that's exactly right. I've known a number of managers like that. So the people who... You know, one manager actually said to me, he was a Scotsman, nothing to do with being a Scotsman, but he had a very rich accent, which I won't try and imitate. But he said, "I don't suffer from stress, son," he said to me, "I'm a carrier." In other words, he liked to make other people stressed out because he gave them a sense of power and control. And I think a number of people who are in positions of authority will deliberately do that. They want to make their subordinates' life as miserable as possible, just in order to emphasise their position in the hierarchy.
It's so true. And the good thing is that you can actually download a professionally produced training film, Time and Stress Management, from askdrdavid.com.uk. It's important you actually have that full address, askdrdavid.com.uk. Otherwise, you'll find another Dr. David from another country entirely, which is not on.
Indeed, you will. There are a lot of Dr. Davids around at the moment.
Lots of Dr. Davids.
And, of course, the book is available to download from Amazon, I think also on the Ask Dr. David site, I'm not sure about
it. It is fantastic. In the classic words of Ask Dr. David, I, your good self, David, you alone must do it, but you need not do it alone.
Exactly so. That's always been my motto when I'm working in therapy.
David, it's been fantastic sharing some good thoughts again with your good self and, of course, having you back on the programme, despite last week when, mea culpa, I know, it's all going all over the place. Will you be kind enough to come back again in the very near future?
Alex, I didn't think it was a time play. I didn't think it was a gambit.
Oh, well, there we are. So I take it then you will return, and I take it you've had a reasonably interesting time on the programme today.
I love your programme. I love the very intelligent members of your team who always ask interesting questions that really, you know, take part very, very well. It's great, great interaction.
A round of applause for Dr. David Lewis, please. Yay! Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much.
And take care.
Bye-bye.
Live in confusion, deep despair. When I was younger, live in illusion, freedom, power. When I was younger.
pimples. Does she really love me? All that crap. But now I don't bother about that shit no more. I know she loves me. All I gotta bother about is standing up.
So he goes, John Lennon. Living on borrowed time. Oh, well. Life continues, and we move from Dr. David Lewis to another deal. We've had Dwayne Clayton, David Lewis. Now we have ace musician Dan Steer with us. Dan, welcome to Midweek Drive. How are you, sir?
Yeah, I'm very well, thanks.
Excellent. Now, The Wire, which we're about to listen to because it is awesome, is the second single from your forthcoming solo album, due for release on the 15th of November. You realise that's a day after Prince Charles's birthday? Just thought I'd put that
I didn't
there.
Realise, but now I know.
Very important. You might be able to tie in, get a bit of a royal endorsement. I just sort of put it out from that particular perspective. Like the recently released first single, Green, The Wire comes from some dark times, yet it's a story of hope and redemption. Share with us, Dan, The Wire, not to be confused, presumably, with the police procedural crime drama, which went very well with Radio, rather Channel 4 back in the day.
Yeah, no, it's completely separate from that. But yeah, I'm very proud of it. You know, it's a cool tune. It reflects kind of some dark times in my life, which I wrote about and coming through the struggle and sticking with things. That kind of thing.
On one level, The Wire is a love song, but it also refers to the network within us connecting us to ourselves and to others, and how the choices we make to feed that network can either liberate or destroy us. Are you listening, Boris Johnson? Sorry, I just want to put that in there. It deals with how we self-medicate with substances to make us feel better, but in reality, the medicine of choice can be poison, making us worse. Are you listening, Priti Patel? Sorry. It is a song of hope and recognising what we are doing to ourselves and becoming stronger because of it. So wonderful, awesome lyrics from that point of view. We have three fine folk in the studio who are all set to cast their creative ear over The Wire. Dan, would you like to introduce us to The Wire with your good self, and then we'll come back to you after, I'd say, about 210 seconds, actually. 3 minutes, 30 seconds.
Okay, brilliant. Yeah, this is Daniel Steer. This is my new single. Enjoy.
Don't let me go. I forget my name. Tell me secrets scaring through the pain. Don't think I can stay away, but I try. I'm so close to falling. You were the wire running through my veins at the fire.
words of Sarah Gosling, BBC introducing, he's gone solo and the project is sounding fantastic. He does it with aplomb. Eva, what did you make of The Wire with Dan Steer?
It was a... I quite liked it. It was a different melody to what I usually listen to, but I was in the background of what we were listening, of what we were discussing, but no, I thought it was quite an enjoyable tune. Quite enjoyed it.
Not that I want to suggest to Dan that we were actually talking about things whilst not listening to his programme, because musicians hate that, you know. Go on. Eloise.
Yeah, I really liked it. Thought it was different.
And, of course, you're wearing a Sex Pistols T-shirt at present, basically, which would be a statement in its own way. Didn't really sound like Sex Pistols, but obviously. And Fergus.
I thought it was brilliant. Yeah, very good beat. I liked the kind of layering of the... There was the voice in the background, and obviously your voice in the arrangement was very good as well. I really enjoyed it.
There we are. Thumbs up around the line, Dan. And it was so wonderful. We even just listened to the music as opposed to looking at the video with the awesome team at Sitcom Soldiers, which sounds interesting also, but I gather it was a positive experience, which is great. Is the video available on YouTube as yet, Dan?
Yeah, it's all online everywhere. That's so great, Dan. Search away, Daniel Steer.
And it's been on Siren Radio as well, Dan. It has been fantastic. And we've got two final questions to put to you, which are, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today? Has it been okay for you?
Say that again, I missed that, sorry.
Has the last few moments been worthwhile getting up through the whole process and actually connecting with us? Has it been reasonable? Has it been okay?
It's been more than reasonable, it's been amazing.
Nice. The next critical question is, can we look forward to connecting with you again in the very near future?
Absolutely. I look forward to talking to you again when my new single's out.
It looks good. Let's a round of applause for Dan Steer. Excellent stuff.
Thanks, everyone.
And here is more Frankie Valli. Maybe they need to actually be more emotionally open. Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, as requested, actually last week by Eloise. And then, of course, Eva comes back and says, yay, play it more. Exactly. And Chirpy Chirpy Tree. Because let's face it, Eva returning to the midweek drive after nearly dying over the summer with glandular fever. Let's not be too dramatic, but, you know, fairly serious. Thankfully, all's well with that. Fergus is here, and Tessa is on the line at present. Yes, Eva, you can now reconnect with our sound and country vision soul, who
basically sort of is so busy she hasn't got time to worry about people going, she's on holiday, you know, she's sorting out anything like that. Last week, as Eloise will attest to, she just said
she wasn't even here.
Play it, you know, just play that, you know, what the heck, just play it from that point of view. It's all right. Where are you, Tessa? Are you parked safely? Have you had a good day in your wonderful work of occupation?
I am back home now, back and having a cup of tea.
Really? So you could have actually been listening to the show online if you weren't in an area where basically the zone is giving all sorts of problems, basically, but never mind. I won't ask you what sort of things you made of the show, because that's what Phil Leonis will actually be asked to do. If indeed he's listening, you never know with Phil these days. Back in the early part of this decade, regularly, it's like clockwork, he'd always listen. Now, since getting married, it's like he's a different man. Anyway, that's anyway, Tessa, moving on, before you have a chat with Fergus, Eloise, and Eva. As we've said, Eva...
Oh, you've got a full studio.
Three? I mean, that's average.
And more,
including
yourself.
All right,
four. One.
Yeah, exactly, and the listener. Eva, you were saying that, I mean, you remember when Tessa was trying to make her debut on the programme, because you're one of our stalwarts, basically. You know, you're here, the whole sort of stuff. It's wonderful.
It was
before Fergus even knew the station existed. Eloise was basically suffering from glandular fever herself at first. It was just nightmare stuff. But this week you've actually brought an interesting one, which has nothing to do with Diana, die rocking, or indeed wishing people to actually die rocking, although there is a sense of actually how the end of everything and die whilst you're rocking, possibly sitting on a rocking chair in an inappropriate position, it could be dangerous. We heard earlier from Dwayne Johnson, or Dwayne Clayton, I should say. See what I did there? Dwayne Clayton correction. That clearly, if you don't actually apply the epinephrine appropriately, you can have all sorts of problems.
And you become the rock.
Exactly. But, Tessa, would you like to introduce this week's Tessa's Tune of the Week?
Yeah, so it's a bit different this week. It's called Die Rockin', as you've mentioned, from...
it's not Welsh, is it? It's not like Die as in the Valleys.
No, from a Texas band called Whiskey Myers. But they're pretty big and quite well known in their field. They're southern rock / country, so it's a bit heavier than usual. It's not for the faint-hearted, I guess. But this track is actually just about the rock and roll life, about bands touring, is dedicated to that. I thought it was really upbeat and really good, so I thought I would play it on air to everyone. I'll let you play it on air, Alex.
I'm gone.
likely to be covered by Kirichi Kanawa in the near future, but that was a die rocking. Eva.
Yeah.
What did you make of it?
That was a very different tune to what I thought Tessa would choose normally.
As she said, you know.
Do you know what? Like, I like rocking tunes sometimes. Yeah. There are, it doesn't happen very often. But, no, I like them sometimes. What was the... why did you choose that sort of song this week, Tessa?
That's why, Tessa.
Yeah.
Why?
Why?
Well, I thought it'd be a complete change to what, you know, we're used to listening to.
Yeah.
And it also goes to show how the genres can be blended in country music and how they can be experimented with. So that's why I chose that one.
And the extra bonus is special breaking news tomorrow morning between 9:02 a.m. and 10 a.m. What the heck, between 9 and 10? A whole Tessa Snott Sound and Country Vision Special Volume 52. It gets a re-airing because Midweek Drive Morning Edition has only really got the hour tomorrow morning before we have to head off to do various other meetings and such like stuff. So I thought, well, but I mean, I could put in some interviews, but I thought, no, let's give the world some Tessa stuff so you can get on the socials already and start saying, if you've missed 52 and you want to catch it on a radio station, online, etc., tomorrow morning between 9 and 10 a.m. is when you can listen the entire, and it is a festival special. I believe a festival special. It's the Long Road special, in some way. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, well, thank you. That's
before she comes back and records two more. Eva, you may even join Tessa in the studio for her next batch of Volume 53 and Volume 54. She might. I mean, she's open to offers, obviously.
Might do.
It depends.
Depends on well enough.
As you know, Tessa, Eva's a high maintenance gal when it comes to sort of, you know, working through the much like yourself, obviously. But anyway, let's carry on. Fergus, what did you make of Die Rockin'?
It was very rockin' too. Yeah, I've not really listened to much southern rock, but from what I've heard, it's been very good. And you know, there was a mixing of different genres there.
I mean, I tend to be more Blackpool rock as opposed to Brighton rock. If you're talking about
Northern, yeah.
So. I think
you were just being broken up there by the actual telephone line, Tessa. We kind of got so what were you thinking, Tessa? No, we don't know. We have no idea what she was thinking at all. Eloise, what were you thinking whilst Tessa hopefully finds a little channel that can actually sort of work and we might find out what she's thinking? If not, think very hard, listener. Think very hard. Focus. Yeah.
I liked it because I like rock music and I really like Texas for no apparent reason. So I'm impressed.
It's a win-win situation. Yeah, Eloise likes rock music and she likes Texas. It's all over. You know, that's basically it. You know, I suppose Charlene Spiteri is going to be the dream sort of choice for next time, really, as the lead singer of the band Texas, although she is Scottish.
Yeah, I've got the reference.
Thank
good
you.
I didn't know that one over.
Very good.
Yeah.
So, I like to drop these in every so often, Fergus. As you know, sometimes the condescending pick them up, sometimes it's like pearls of horse wine. Anyway, moving on. Tessa, what were you thinking?
I think he sounds a lot like Axl Rose from the
Yeah, I was thinking that as well. Yeah.
And they actually, with Miles, they did open up for the Rolling Stones.
I think we're going to have to hold it there, Tessa, because we managed to decode Axl Rose and Rolling Stones, and after that, frankly, it was just noise. I mean, I'm being honest. You know, we started off so well with that sort of phone link, and then it kind of just degenerated. You know, you can trust that with
really?
The... Oh, you said we don't... Oh, God, oh really? No, it's all... Maybe it's Zoe. Maybe she's trying to reach us somewhere.
I'm sitting down in one place.
No, that's much better. You see, if you will insist on doing this strange, peculiar, feminine
walking
approach of multitasking... I mean,
it doesn't always work.
No, exactly. Focus on just one thing. You don't move around with the phones. Lord knows what could happen there. Still.
that album as well, the album that song's from, Die Rocking, it's the first track on their new, it's actually self-produced and self-titled album. So, their fifth studio album.
Well,
and it's out now.
They should be privileged to have actually been your choice for Tune of the Week in the first week of October in the year of our Lord, 2019. 2019 AD is something which in the history of Die Rockin', nothing to do with rocking chairs, although I still think it would be great if you had a video with lots of rocking chairs going backwards and forwards, like some sort of craze kind of aspect that's genius. Die Rockin', well put together. And the band, of course, once again, Tessa, are?
Whiskey Myers.
Whiskey Myers.
Go and check them out if you can.
And Myers as in M-Y-E-R-S or...
Yes, M-Y.
Yeah, like Michael Myers, the scary character from Halloween.
Or the actor who played Troy.
Who would have died rocking. Exactly.
Look at that. You see?
It's like writing their public relations press releases whilst the show's there and showing the benefits of actually sitting down in one place and not moving around when you're doing a telephone message. Coming up very shortly, hopefully Phil Leonis, maybe Zoe Janison, I don't know. Still, here's Albert Hammond. Hold that. We forgot to ask Tessa those last two questions. You know. I could see three faces in front of me, Tessa, because I'm hallucinating, and they were saying, but what about those last three questions? You know. So let's have one from Eloise, please.
Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
Mm. I sure have.
Yeah. And what's the next one? Ava.
Are you okay, Alex?
No.
Oh, will you be joining us again soon, Tessa?
Yeah. See you next week.
Yeah, she's moving around now, so you've been losing her. She's moving around.
Got on board a westbound 747. Didn't think before deciding what to do. All that talk of opportunities, TV breaks and movies rang true. Sure.
And, you know, he was from Gibraltar originally, Albert Hammond, a Gibraltarian, marvellous. You know, weather forecasts from Gabriella Peralta from Gibraltar, and it never rains in Southern California, but girl, don't they warn you? It pours. Man, it pours. Phil Leonis, welcome back to Midweek Drive. How are you, sir?
I never knew that he was from Gibraltar, and maybe that's because he just did pop and could not rock.
Whoa. Whoa. Whoa, 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 whoa! I was seconds away from playing 99 Miles from LA, another Albert Harmon classic, or indeed Free Electric Band. But, you know, he gave it up for music, and the Free Electric Band could almost be the theme for Chilpack Hollywood. Phil, have you listened to any of the show today, or do you need me to reprise who's in the studio, what's been happening, and so on?
I have not. I have been hosting a memorial for a friend that died. I have been in rehearsals for a musical show that I am emceeing this weekend. I am at a construction site right now. So, no, I have not.
Well, that's perfectly okay.
So I would love you to reset, although I would share you this famous quote about L.A. first, and you can guess who said it. Los Angeles is a city best seen at night from a great distance.
That was the joint sound of Fergus and myself actually having the, what we refer to as the masculine regularly used on this side of the Atlantic. You may like to actually employ it yourself if you ever return to Britain.
You know why you had that reaction? Because it was Roman Polanski, and
exactly.
Roman Polanski he's a downer. He's a downer.
What was I going to say? Do you want to talk about the Venice Film Festival getting awards, not turning up for those awards, all the rest of the bits and pieces there? Let's talk about the Joker, or not as the case. There's so many ways we could go, but no, we're not. I'm going to actually sort of substitute by saying Eva MacDonald is back in the house, Phil. Eva MacDonald. We thought she might have been.
Welcome back.
Yes, yeah.
Hello.
She's had children to entertain. She's had. I mean, what were you eating? One of those videos as an entertainer. What were you eating?
Right, so there's a game show that we have to do. Yeah. It's a bit like Saturday Night Takeaway, if you've ever watched it.
He won't in America.
Oh, not in America, but in, like, anyone in
the
UK.
Even on YouTube, it would be
a variety show. Yeah.
Kind of like a variety show. Mm-hmm. But I had the pleasure of eating very cold baked beans.
Cold baked beans.
And having cream pies in the face. Yeah, my job can extend to
a lot. Is it any wonder you went down with glandular fever when you have a diet of cold baked beans and cream pies in the face?
Probably not.
Too much, too much. Remember, Eva, the line of a midweek drivette, dignity, always dignity.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
And I bet Phil knows where that comes from in terms of lines, etc. Eloise Sheehan is back with us to continue her Latin work. What Latin word have you brought for us this week, Eloise? What Latin studies have you developed?
I've brought nothing for you.
You've brought nothing? You've got nothing.
I've literally got nothing.
You've literally got not even a cogito, not even a sum, and ergo is gone, you know, it's dead.
Wow, that is the linguistic version of a plate of cold baked beans right there.
Exactly.
You are welcome.
I was thinking maybe an unum, maybe an e, maybe a pluribus, but no, you know, nothing. Yeah. You know.
She's not compos mentis.
Yeah. As Cicero might have actually said, or possibly Marcus Aurelius. He would have banned nothing either. anyway, and Fergus Jeffs, of course, who is driven up from Leicestershire.
By the rail network.
Well, by the rail network. Yeah. You drove a train.
No, I can't drive yet. I'm still learning. Yeah, it's one of the things that I've kind of left until I've graduated.
No. Well, you know how to manage your time.
Now I've got time to do so.
So what, Fergus?
So when you say, wait a second, Fergus. When you say you can't drive, you mean you don't have a license to drive? Is that what you mean?
I'm still learning to drive. I only have a provisional license, so I'm still doing the license.
Because Alex can't drive, but that doesn't stop him.
I mean, Eva, you have been a passenger many a time. Many a time. Any issues?
I've not died, so no.
There you are. And Eloise, likewise. Now, I appreciate there was one time. One time.
A week bridge.
Yeah, we went over a week bridge, because it said it was a week bridge. Not a weekly bridge, not a week bridge, a periodic bridge. A bridge which actually was quite physically weak. We got over it.
Look, I kid, and I'm unnecessarily harsh to Alex Suri. It's not that he's not good at driving. What he does very well. It's just that he's limited. For example, I think a driver should be able to turn both left and right. Occasionally, take a right turn. But he's, you know, he'll incorporate it. He'll incorporate it eventually.
Yeah. See, this is the sort of thing that leads transatlantic relations to just take a turn to go south after being so good for so. What did I say earlier in the program? He's changed. You know, he's changed so much. You know, the earlier
it's
he's
all this. it's all this impeachment inquiry that I'm under that really has me.
I mean, you know, you've got a peach on one hand, you've got an apple tree on the other. Where do you put the constitution in terms of that? It's quite amazing. And indeed, was it the cherry tree or was it the apple tree Washington admitted to chopping down? I mean, clearly he should have denied everything. I mean, that's the way forward. I don't know.
Well, let's talk about this. I think it was a cherry tree, right? Wasn't it a cherry tree that Washington chopped down?
Yeah,
and the thing is, the famous story, can we just talk about this just for a second? The famous story is that we knew, you know, it's a story about how admirable he was because he was so honest. His parents come home, they find him holding an axe, and they find a tree having fallen, and he says, "I cannot tell a lie, I chopped down the cherry tree." Most of us have a totally different set of questions when we come home and a little child is holding an axe. We've got, like, different problems we need to discuss. It has nothing to do with whether you tell the truth or not. In fact, maybe if you're going to keep wielding an axe as you grow up, you learn to lie. That might be a better thing. So
we're back to Michael Myers again, aren't we? You know, it's almost as though we've gone full circle to that whole
sort
of sequence.
I loved Austin Powers and Wayne's World.
Exactly. it's you know, these are the segments of the whole program which are knit together even when people haven't been listening. Eva.
Michael Myers, I'm sure you've pointed out, Michael Myers is the face of
William Shatner.
All
sorts of other ratings. Eva, what little highlights of the program would you actually point out to Phil, which may give him pause for actually saying, you know what, I'll download that podcast when it goes live in a few hours' time. I'll listen to that whole show.
I think it was quite interesting listening to Dwayne Clayton and also to, was it Dr. David Lewis?
Mm.
I think Dwayne Clayton, he was about crime and I think crime writing
and how he basically left the police because basically in Canada nobody likes the police but they love firefighters. They just love firefighters. Yeah. if you're a cop in Canada, forget it, you are dead, effectively. Not literally, obviously, we're not going to encourage any guy, but you're not basically looked at with the kind of admiration that firefighters are, which I thought was an interesting take on the Canadian perspective. Maybe Phil can raise it with Dean Haglund in terms of, you know, is this true?
Dean was a drummer in a punk band whose name was Truncheon Scars.
That's everything.
Literally referencing abusive police officers. Oh. And I said, Dean, you experienced abusive police officers growing up? And he said, no, I grew up in Winnipeg. I don't think I ever saw a cop. So, I think they don't like them without actually ever having seen them or met them. Yeah, police officers. It's just, but fight the man. Fight the man, they say, unless it's hockey season, in which case we'll fight each other.
And that's one of the reasons why the Canadian Mounted Police were just so wonderful. The Northern Exposure was a vastly, vastly underrated show.
The Mounties.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Classic. And Eloise, anything you'd like to add? I mean, you managed to retain consciousness for the last hour and a half,
really,
which is
myself.
Very good. Yes.
Other than the fact that he's missed a lot of Frankie Valli. I actually have a question, if that's okay.
Of course it is. I mean, I remember the time, Eloise, where even asking you to ask a question was almost an exercise in existentialism.
Yeah.
But here we are.
You mentioned you were doing something with a musical. Can you tell me more?
No.
Oh, all right.
Yes, okay, fine. You twisted my arm. Yes, so next week... celebrated throughout all of the right-thinking world is Leif Erikson Day, the actual founder of or discoverer of North America, or the first European, let's say, to set foot on the North American continent. And it used to be something that was celebrated with great festivals in America, especially in Los Angeles, especially in the 50s. And so as a fundraiser for my beloved Los Angeles Breakfast Club, I'm putting on a variety show set in the year 1953. It's Leif Erikson Day, 1953. We're celebrating him the way we imagine they might have back in 1953. So it's very tongue-in-cheek. A lot of good musical numbers. We're recreating the first Leif Erikson Day. And there's magic and dance and funny Viking hats. I mean, what more do you want?
See, to me, I'm just impressed by the fact that even SpongeBob SquarePants can actually get involved with Leif Erikson Day. I mean, that's what you call real quality stuff. The annual observance that occurs on October the 9th, quite literally just days after Katie Grimmison's birthday. One day after, to be precise.
Now, do you know why? Yes, the official story is that they were blown off course on their way to Greenland for Leif Erikson after converting to Christianity to become the chieftain of the tribes of Greenland. But they got blown off course, and they discovered a newfound land, which would become called Newfoundland. Mm. And yet Leif Erikson called it Vinland. But do you know the real reason, Alex, that Leif Erikson was heading to North America?
Was it to actually make an early sales pitch to actually offer the country of Greenland to Donald Trump in a time machine carrying
no,
away?
No, but close. But your real estate connection is close. He was, like the rest of us, just searching for land that might be affordable.
Oh, you see, it's like a classic moment of those little fjords, which, of course, followers of Douglas Adams will say it was the crinkly bits that made Slarty Bart Fast so much appreciated in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
You don't want to say that too fast. You really don't want to, or you get censored. So Leif Erikson Day, not just a day for my people, the Norwegians. And I've learned the Norwegian national anthem for this show, which is spectacular. It sounds just like Deck the Halls. But anyway, it's not just a day for the Norwegian. It's for it's for the Swedes. And it's, I don't know who else, the Swiss, I mean the Danish. It's for so many. There's more, but I can't.
The Scandinavians. The Scandinavians. See what,
what I did?
I ruined the whole. I'm sorry. I will hang my shame, my head in shame. Hang my shame in head for the foreseeable future, or at least 7 days. We haven't even talked about the Lincoln Book Festival because we couldn't, because Rory wasn't actually here. But never mind. That's all right. What questions would you like to put to Phil Leonis, please, Fergus?
I was wondering. With Leif Erikson, has it been supplanted by some of the more similar holidays?
SpongeBob's favourite holiday next to April the 1st.
Some of the similar holidays like Columbus Day, have they taken greater prominence as time's gone on?
Well, that's the strange thing about it, is that, yes, Columbus Day continues to be, by presidential proclamation, there still is every year observance of Leif Erikson Day, but yes, Columbus Day supplanted it. And it's strange because Leif Erikson Day was celebrated and kind of rising as a way to try to supplant Columbus Day. Columbus Day was first, and so with its revisionist history. And so there was this effort to not only set the record correct, but also to a much greater degree really explore the spirit of exploration, celebrate that spirit. And so for a brief period of time in this country, it seemed like Leif Erikson Day was making a toehold, but Columbus Day has reemerged and is the one we all celebrate, even though we all know he never set foot on America, didn't discover America. So I'll be doing another show to celebrate Columbus Day. And how we celebrate that, you'll love this, Alex, is that I break into other variety shows and I take over and I force those casts into slave labor. That's how I celebrate the Columbus Day.
Exactly. Yeah. Amerigo Vespucci would be very proud and pleased to actually see that put together. It would. Now, the other sort of thing is, in terms of Leif Erikson, presumably the early exploration of North America, looking for land, admittedly, was it connected with Thomas Cook at all? Or is it just a case of it doesn't go quite that back as far? Or have you not actually covered the Thomas Cook story? Is it a case of that's just some British travel agent that might have been in existence for about 178 years and is now basically gone because of all sorts of reasons? Is that a case of I don't care anymore?
Well, I don't know if I don't care, but I would say that Leif Erikson wore a funny Viking hat, and that just looks great on stage.
And so does SpongeBob when he's actually wearing his, you know, it's SpongeBob. I mean, you've got to love SpongeBob, haven't you, Eva? Just to work through that. Eva, any questions you'd like to put to Phil Leonis? Because this is the first time you've had a chance to communicate with our West Angeles.
West Angeles.
Correspondent, exactly.
No, I just wanted to touch again on the Leif Erikson Day, but I don't know if it's already been covered, but are there any usual traditions that are usually done with Leif Erikson Day?
Eating cold beans.
Yeah, eating cold beans. Or was it just something that
you know, it's like St. George's Day here in England. It's just there.
You don't have any real dragons to be slain, effectively.
But, yeah, are there any usual traditions with it? Or?
Apart from the hats, of course.
Apart from the hats?
Well, are there any usual? Yeah, I mean, I guess there are. I mean, there's traditional folklore songs that are sung and dances and things like that. But I think it's mostly about the foods and about the stories. But I'm hoping that maybe this will inspire new traditions, because we're digging deep on some of the authentic history. For example, shining a light on a little known chapter that we think really ought to be celebrated more, which was that wonderful time where Leif Erikson's sister went nuts and slaughtered all the other women in the camp with a hatchet. So there's always new traditions that we might inspire.
Says it all. It could be what the world actually needs to actually take Leif Erikson into a whole new world. Eloise, did you want to add anything, or was it just a case of...
I mean, I was stretching, but sure. Yes. I want to know where my invite was to go see this musical. I'm quite upset that I'm not watching
it. I'm not surprised. I mean, last week, of course, he breaks the news about your tragedy in the Frank Sinatra house.
Now this.
This week is Leif Erikson. I mean, it's almost as though he's got some sort of pathological aspect of sort of saying, she's from London, I'm going to make her life hell. You know, audio hell. Whatever. Hopefully you will have a sensational Leif Erikson day, because you'll be joining us on the Midweek Drive in 7 days, we hope. If we ask him those last two questions, as opposed to what we nearly did with Tessa, and we had to hold out.
You mean we? You nearly did.
Yeah, well. who would you like to ask you one of those two questions, Phil Leonis? Would it be Fergus, would it be Eva, or would it be...
You can do it.
Eloise.
Yes.
Nice. question one, please. For Phil. Has he
heard? Me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I didn't know my name was yet.
Rehearsals
went
much better.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today, Phil?
All of us here in the West Angeles studio of Siren FM have had a great time.
That's what we like to hear.
Eloise?
Will you be joining us again?
On Leif Erikson Day.
Yes.
Oh, the gods of Asgard willing, I will be back next week.
There we are. Either that, or we'll phone somebody up on a completely different number who's also American, who basically sort of thought I was some sort of strange, sort of limey, sort of trend. I think it might have actually been, I don't know, Ivana. I think that was the sort of line I was probably getting through. So she sounded a bit like Ivana. Never mind. Anyway, enough of such stuff. Thank you to Anna Lewis, William Coles, Dwayne Clayton, Dr. David Lewis, Dan Steer, and Tessa Snart, and in the studio, Eva MacDonald, and Eloise Sheehan, and Fergus Jeffs, and you, dear listener, tomorrow morning. I don't know, I mean, Phil rarely does the morning shows these days. Mind you, neither do you, Fergus, so probably we'll just have to work our way through it. But that's because you have to come up from Leicester, and it's not easy. It's not easy.
It's not easy.
May
have to find another way.
Eva's still getting used to being back in Lincoln, so time zones are going to be out. Eloise, I don't know.
I'm in Latin.
You're in Latin. What, 8 o'clock? Anyway, join me, because Richard Fitzwilliams will be there, Gabriella Peralta will be there, and we'll be talking to a whole range of other fine folk as well. And that's it. We're out of here. What would you like us to have as the valedictory few words to say the end of another Midweek Drive, Phil Leonis?
We'll meet again.
Really? Going classic WW2. On us from that point of view, in a kind of channeling of the wondrous sound of the darling of the troops, still with us over a century, 100 years, she's still going, Dame Vera Lynn. Mm. Exactly. Don't know where, don't know when, but we will meet again some sunny day. Okay, that's it. We'll meet again. 1, 2, 3.
We'll meet again.
We'll meet again.